Well, the Summit County Council meets in work session at the Richens Auditorium tomorrow, starting at about 1:45 in the studio with a preview. Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So about 1:55, the public information officer from Horx Engineering is before the council to review the plan to communicate with the public during the roundabout construction. Any idea what message they want to get out?
Well, you know, we learned a lot in the last few years doing some larger capital projects, whether they be buildings or road projects. And, you know, there's because of these things last over several seasons, you're sometimes in school time, sometimes not, and sometimes coming back to school time. There's a lot of communication and a lot of touch points we have to hit during the year in order to keep people informed of what's happening, how to navigate through transportation projects when they're going on, because we got to keep those roads open and that interstate intersection open during this whole project. So that's what we're trying to accomplish here. So we're just going to be communicating with a lot of people in a lot of different ways this year.
And we know it's just, I mean, basically it'll just be unpleasant, right?
It's going to be unpleasant. So if you are a regular traveler through that area and you don't have any alternative, you're going to have to figure it out. You know, it could be different day to day. But we want to be able to at least put information out there that gives people the warning of what's going to happen and what's going to change.
All right. Let's see. There will be a presentation on funding the roundabouts. That's about 2 weeks after you had heard that there was a 24% overage and the council agreed to an additional $2 million. The way I understand it is that we've got $700,000 that can come from the transportation sales tax, $500,000 from the mineral lease monies, $2 million from impact fees, and then $2.1 million from the fourth quarter sales tax. So with all of that, you have enough?
Yeah. So what the council asked us to do is to come back after we had gotten into the contracting with UDOT on this and give them a briefing on exactly where would the money come from and what would be offset or what projects might be delayed in the future in order to do that. And the bottom line is we had a project ready to or starting to go through the process for the Klein Dolly parcel, the parcel of land that's just east of the Jeremy Ranch School. There was planned to be some parking constructed there. We were suggesting that project be delayed until after 2022. Which will free up the money that will go into this project and finish that off.
So what are we talking about then? What was budgeted?
So approximately just under $2 million, and then the remainder will come from some fund balances that we have in some of our sales tax accounts. So through that, we'll be able to make up the difference on the Jeremy Ranch project and keep one of the points that the council made was that they'd rather keep the contingency in place. So if there are changes to the project over this year, that we can react to that.
That's what I was going to ask. If prices go up from here, you will
have some money. Well, I don't know if it's prices go up, but, you know, when you're digging into the ground like we're going to be doing and the utility companies are going to be doing, you just find stuff that you weren't anticipating. So those are the things that usually get handled with contingency.
Okay, so with the money from the Klein Dolly park and ride, that you won't need to pull money from the mineral lease monies or the impact fees?
Yeah, so we won't have to do that and dip into those fund balances as much.
Okay. Let's see, a review of projects related to public lands and how much staff time this would take?
Yeah, so a couple of things in this item. You know, we have constantly we are either cooperating agencies or providing comments on different federal lands processes around the state, whether that be something related to one of the reservoirs, wildlife concerns, or forest management plans, those types of things. And we've got several of those going on top of our participation in the Central Wasatch Commission. Recently, the council has been interested in perhaps making another run at our public lands initiative in the Uinta Mountains. So after a meeting we had with some of the interests around the public lands initiative that we did with Congressman, we started with Congressman Bishop a couple of years ago. The council is going to talk about that again and see if we want to get back into that process and see if we can get some legislation passed. That's going to require a significant amount of work, both in organizing meetings, but also drafting legislation, working with our federal delegation to get something passed. So we have a set work plan for the year. We need to maybe adjust some of that in order to fit this type of work in. So that's what we'll be talking about.
So the Central Wasatch Commission, is it the time for the council to decide if they put in another $50,000?
You know, I don't know if it's time yet, but I think it's I think the council needs to continue to talk about it. And we might suggest at some point that we just say whether, you know, if this is a set amount we want to be able to participate in. They're not really asking for a set dollar amount yet. So we'll be talking about that.
And then the state management of Echo State Park, a concern that there may be too much development being allowed between the Echo shoreline and the road?
You know, I haven't heard that concern necessarily by the council. Of course, we had the state park director in last week to talk about that development. And I haven't heard those concerns out of the local government yet. So if we do, we'll react to that.
And then the governor's petition on a roadless rule policy for Utah, since the council doesn't want to open up the forest too much to development, does staff recommend that the county try to clarify or modify the state's language?
Well, I mean, the council has been supportive of the language because they supported our submission into that process. So we are being asked by some interest groups to oppose that, but given that the governor's proposal is cooperative with us, we may send something out. The council has talked about sending something out that clarifies our stance on that, but I don't see anything real drastic on that.
Okay. Let's see. The council will also get an active transportation update from Caroline Rodriguez. Anything new here?
Not a whole lot new. I think it's all stuff that you've probably heard before, except that this is really an opportunity for the county council to kind of put a stake in the ground with the Utah Department of Transportation and say, this is how we want highway projects and transportation projects from your level looked at as we go forward. Without this type of plan, UDOT doesn't have anything to react to. This is kind of their mode of communicating with the local government on having trails, having bike lanes, having highways, state highways wide enough to handle different modes of transportation, to have sidewalks along them, those types of things. Once we finish this plan and have it in place, we can properly communicate with UDOT about where we want these amenities as they do their projects.
Well, regarding that safe crossing there, 224 then, between the Blue Roof and the Canyons intersection, I mean, is there going to be a study here to decide on an option?
Well, I think we really want to push UDOT to help us with that. Everything has been kind of looked at from a recreation standpoint in the past about some type of separated crossing on 224. But, you know, UDOT's the owner of the highway and the operator of the highway, and that is the barrier that we're trying to cross. So I think they have to be involved with that.
All right. Regarding e-bike, additional stations and additional bikes in years to come?
Well, e-bikes, yeah, you know, they've been very popular. I don't know that we know what the magic number is of bikes or stations. But we're probably below it right now. So I think we're going to continue to work on that.
Okay. Then a discussion and possible approval of an ordinance on the scooter share programs. The council, what, just gave direction to ban private businesses from operating here?
We were kind of, you know, you recall we were waiting for the state legislator to get through their process to see what they were going to do with scooter share programs. So we're following what the ordinance or the state law allows, and the council has decided that they would like to ban those. So they will not. This will not allow us to license them or bring them in unless those companies, unless they prove to the council that the ordinance needs to change.
Okay. Again, this private individuals may continue to own their own.
Oh, absolutely. E-scooters. Absolutely.
Yeah. And let's see, at 6:30, a public hearing and possibly a vote to adopt the Kimball Junction Master Plan into the general plan. You've held open houses for the last 3 weeks. Are we going to continue to take public input?
Absolutely. So public hearing for the next, we have it scheduled with possible adoption this week. I would predict that we're probably going to take probably a couple weeks of public comment on this. But we've been out doing open houses. We've been out, we've had staff out at grocery stores on weekends. We've been at the Basin Rec Field House to field as many questions and get comments as possible. The council has all that information and comments have been fed back to the council. So I think we're going to see a pretty robust discussion of this tomorrow.
So any input, though, that you have heard that will make it into the new?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not much more than you've already heard. Everything from support of the concepts that are in the neighborhood plan to being reticent about further development, about heights of buildings, about density, those types of things.
All right. Also wanted to ask you about the news about the dead deer there at the 3 Mile landfill, apparently who died after eating plastic bag and other garbage. I mean, what is the county doing in response?
So we've been, long before this became a public issue and some of the hikers that were up in the area stumbled upon this, we've been working with the DWR, the state agency that deals with wildlife, since about the January-February timeframe, because we had already noticed that there were more wildlife hanging out around the landfill than normal. And some of that, I don't want to speak for the DWR because they're the experts on this. They have made no correlation between the trash at the landfill and the deaths of the animals. I think they would say that more the severity of the winter was the cause of some of those animal deaths. However, we do have problems sometimes with trash blowing out of the landfill and depositing on different parts of our property. Animals are attracted by that. There's no doubt about it. So we've already got a project this year to do some fencing work to capture more of that as it blows. We're going to be covering and finishing covering kind of a temporary cover of the current cell that's filling up. And then we'll be opening up the new cell, which is at a lower elevation, a little bit more protected from the wind. So we expect that by next winter, we'll have a lot less trash blowing out of the landfill.
Well, apparently the county plans to cover the landfill with heavy rock as opposed to just dirt because the deer have figured out how to...
Yeah, it's a combination of we've been using kind of a light material that comes out of the Utilite mine that's adjacent to the landfill, a relationship that was built several decades ago. That material, especially on the high point of our current cell, is too light. So we're going to change cover material, and we've been working with our regulators on that.
Well, I guess this brings to the forefront the question of banning plastic bags.
It certainly brings it up, doesn't it? Plastic bags do blow. It's one of the things that you see out there most around landfills. And so we're prepared for that conversation whenever it comes up.
Yeah. Are other landfills in Utah having a similar problem that you're aware of?
I can't represent that.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
That's all I've got today.
All right, Tom, thanks.
Thank you.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, you're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Sure. Well, Memorial Day marks the unofficial start of summer. In the studio to preview this season's special events, I have Park City Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's see, maybe what's just coming up first here to kind of kick off our summer event season.
Well, not an event, but we will kick off the season on Friday, on May 31st, with Park City High School graduation. We do want to say congratulations to the class of 2019. If you are in the area of Park City High School on Friday evening, please carpool to that event or slow down in that area. It is normally very busy in that on Kernza for that event.
Okay. And then you also have a couple of events taking place at Quinn's Junction on Saturday.
So on Saturday, we will have the first of the series for the Park City Trail Series. That starts with the 5K. That's an 8 o'clock in the morning start. That event is usually over by noon, if not earlier. So if you are out there in the morning and wanting to hit the trails, I would just recommend maybe another area besides Round Valley that morning. And then that evening, we have the NAC Barn Party. That's to celebrate all that the National Ability does, their staff programs, and that'll have live music and barbecue. There are still tickets available, including a family package, and that event is from 5:30 to 10 p.m. We do normally see with that event some parking impacts out there as well, so please carpool if you are attending that event.
Okay. Any new events that you wanted to highlight?
Right now, there are not very many new events. Silly Market is starting this week on Sunday, and we've really worked kind of in what I would call the off season and in the spring of providing further balance to the calendar. So we have a handful of events that are not returning this year because they were one-time events, and we've also worked to kind of move some events around on the calendar coming up later in the summer, say where the summit is no longer the same weekend as Arte Latino or as Ragnar Relay. So just further balancing the calendar as we can.
Okay. Let's see. How is the city working to encourage people to park outside of the city and to use transit during the big events?
So I think that's a really great question. You're going to hear me 100 times say do everything you can to carpool, bike, and take transit. I think one of the best opportunities that we have this year that's new that we started really with Sundance Film Festival this year is the Ecker Hill Park and Ride. There are spaces out there and transit will be running from that area. So if you're coming from Salt Lake or coming from Kimball Junction, that's a great place to park and come into town for any of the events or activities you're coming in to do. We also, I think when we're planning events, it's not necessarily just about transit or just about parking or just about the weather, if there's snow on the ground or what it might be. But it's really everyone working together on all of these parameters of the entire transportation system, both in the city as well as out in the county. And so all of the things that we're doing together with the event applicants really affect the overall transportation system.
Okay. And again, we're still using the PC events text for people to get more information about.
Yes, so that's a great way. We're always looking for ways to communicate. So it is, if you just text PC events to 888-777, we will be pushing out both transportation as well as emergency information. My example is a couple years ago, we had power outages during Arts Fest, and we were able to communicate to people about those power outages. So if you haven't signed up for that, please do. It's a super helpful tool.
All right. As you mentioned, Park City Sunday Market starting Sunday. What do visitors need to know about parking and transit with this?
So I just want to remind folks with this one, please remember that we do close Lower Main Street. That's from Heber to 9th. That's every Sunday during the market. From about 6 a.m. until about 7 p.m., the street is normally reopened by 7 in the evening. I do want to remind folks for this event and for this year in particular with the construction at the high school, we are asking people to park at McPullen and Treasure. So normally people park at the high school. There is some parking right now available at the high school, but I believe there's also a sewer project that will take that parking lot out. So please park. Again, it's over at McPullen and Treasure Mountain Middle School and use the transit stop kind of outside of the Learning Center if you're coming to the event. And then also residents on Park Avenue, as always, we do have a residential permit for those residents that are affected by the Silly Market. And we'll be doing outreach in the residential areas as well as on Main Street to answer any questions from merchants or residents this week. As always, I think one of the greatest things about the Silly Market is their bike valet that is back again. Silly Market started that a long time ago, I think since the beginning of the market, and really kind of paved the way for some other events. But the bike valet is down on 9th Street. I hear that we're going to have sunshine perhaps on Sunday, so it might be a great day to ride your bike to the market, come see the farmers market too, and have some fun out there.
All right. And paid parking goes up for this for Sunday only? Is that how it works?
For Sunday only, for Silly Market, we do normally see parking lots fill by about 10 or 11 in the morning. And so throughout this event, parking is $5 an hour from 10 until 5 o'clock. The max rate all day is 18 $18, and I think it's really important that the first hour is free. So if you come at 10 o'clock and you want to run to the farmer's market and run and grab a cup of coffee, that first hour that you're in the in those areas, it is a free parking rate. So again, that is in China Bridge. Or even if you come at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you still get that the first hour free.
Okay. And then what, it goes back down to $3 an hour then after?
It'll go back down. Actually, the first 2 weeks, it'll go back down to $1 an hour because we're still in the off-season rates. And then in 2 weeks from now, it'll be that $3 an hour rate.
Okay. Let's see. You'll be leading Sundance 2019 debrief at the city council meeting on Wednesday. We've got two meetings this week, Wednesday and Thursday. Maybe you can kind of highlight where the city did well and where we can improve.
You know, I think that all events, but Sundance in particular, is an incredible opportunity for our community. I do also want to thank Sundance Institute for all their work and our and working towards our critical priority of transportation. A lot of people don't know that Sundance Film Festival actually pays for the buses that are at Richardson Flat, and that is such a huge advantage to our entire community and both to Sundance for all that they're doing. So that in particular, I just want to highlight and say thanks to them for. I think overall, what you'll hear in the recap of that, and I will be back on the radio with Diane tomorrow to talk a little bit more in detail, is that the event is a huge, it is a huge success. And with all the things going on around Sundance, the one thing that we will continue to focus on is transportation moving forward. It is a peak time for us, and every year with the changes in technology and the way that the world in general is changing, our team at the city and our team in partnership with Sundance continue to work on that as a whole.
Yeah, and then certainly I think that's one of the big complaints about traffic, especially in the Old Town area, the kind of the looky-loos, you know, who are in the ride-sharing vehicles. What if we just were to drop them off at the trolley turnaround? I mean, is that a solution? Are we looking at solutions, or are we not going to change any way that we do things there?
You know, I think we are always looking at solutions. The challenge itself is very complex. So, for instance, Lyft does have a drop-off down at the trolley turnaround, and looking, there's so many moving parts, whether it's Lyft or Uber, or local taxis or hotel shuttles or locals or merchants. There's all these people that need to get around, and we're always looking at the best and the next way to get people to where they need to go safely and efficiently as well. Okay. And then I would just add, too, I think one of the changes that continue to kind of shape town are the resorts, because at the same time we have the events going on, we also have two incredible ski resorts that allow us a lot of opportunity in our community as well. So working with them and really looking at the whole picture to start solving the challenges.
Yeah, that could change though very quickly, right? I mean, with the development of both lots.
Yes.
Recently, Recycle Utah had its community cleanup. They noted that a lot of the trash they gathered likely blew out of overflowing trash cans at big events. And is the city going to try and do anything here to try and make sure that we keep things clean when we see these large amount of visitors come to town?
You know, I can't say enough about both our parks and streets crews for all that they do to help both for trash and recycling on the street, whether it's a major an event or any other day of the week. You know, there was a team of us at the city, and I think City Council also acknowledged this a couple weeks ago. Right when all the snow started to melt, we saw a lot of trash and debris start to pop up, whether it was from an event or not. And we sent a little email out to all of our teams, and we all went out there together and started picking things up, not just in Old Town, but around the entire city. And it literally took a matter of a couple of days to pick all those things up and clean up. And that, I think that happens over time, is that we see some of that, especially in the winter with all the snow, some of those debris. And when the snow melts, we go around and pick that up.
Okay. Jenny, anything else you want to mention?
I don't have anything specific. We do have a list of events coming up, just a couple more to highlight, Arte Latino in just a couple weeks. And I don't think I'm back on the radio to speak about that one. But that'll be, I believe it's on June 15th at Park City Library. That's a great one to go out and celebrate. And then I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Just want to make sure people know Savor the Summit is one weekend further in the calendar. So that'll be on June 22nd.
Okay. Jenny, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Park City Special Events Director Jenny Dearson. You're listening to the Local News Hour. It's 8:41. Well, Alejandra Lara from Park City Horse Experience, also working as a Summit County Prevention Specialist with Valley Behavioral Health. She joins me now in the studio to tell us an opportunity for parents to register for a free workshop happening in July. Good morning to you, Alejandra.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so the workshop is going to be where and when?
So the workshop is going to be at the PC Mark every Monday on July and the first Monday on August.
Okay. And this is for whom? I had mentioned parents, but specific parents?
Yes. So these are for parents of kids of 8 years old and younger. We want to teach really a lot of different skills that are going to help us really shape how our kids believe in themselves and how they take decisions for the rest of their lives.
Okay. So is it something then that parents would sign up for all 6 or?
Yeah, yeah. Seven lessons. And we totally understand that the people are really busy and 7 weeks might be a long time. So we will also be open for people that want to come to just one class or 2 classes. Mm-hmm. We will be there from noon to 1:30 p.m. So please, you know, just come if you can. Ideally is that you pre-register.
And how do people do that?
So they can call me at 435-575-1213 or email me at Alejandra L, AlejandraL at valleycares.com.
Okay. So is it you who are going to be doing yes. the presentations or do you have guest speakers coming in?
Nope. It will be me. We will go through, everyone will get a book and we go through every week through the lessons and the skills that they're going to be learning. Then they practice it and then we speak and share with all the different, you know, all the parents share their experiences and we learn from each other as well.
Okay. So how many can you accept?
Up to 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we provide, the PC Mark provides free childcare, and so that's really convenient. We do need to know how many kids in advance.
Okay. And what are some of the topics that you'll be discussing?
So understanding our young children and their behavior and building self-esteem in their early years, listening and talking to young kids and helping them to learn to cooperate. Discipline and social and emotional development.
Okay.
Really understanding of how it all starts and what age starts what and how to develop their personality traits in the best way.
All right. Now, is the book also available in Spanish? Because I know you're
yes.
bilingual.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We can also offer this class in Spanish. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want people to know about it?
Also, because it's at lunchtime, they could bring lunch and have their lunch there. It's going to be really cool. We are our children's most influential teacher. So come on over. Let's learn together.
Okay. Alejandra, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:56.